Most of us deal with anxiety from time to time, whether it's worrying about, you know, what if scenarios or being uneasy when a loved one maybe goes on a long trip. It's not unusual to get caught up in those feelings. But when we aren't able to move past it, or we feel ourselves maybe spiraling further and further into those thoughts, they can pose a problem. Imagine how much more difficult it can be for a child who is suffering from anxiety. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Anxiety can be a real problem for children, very difficult to detect, and frankly, we need to detect it, and it needs to be treated if it exists. That's what Dr. Marcia Slattery says anyway, and I believe her. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist at the University of Wisconsin, director of the UW Anxiety Disorders Program. Specializes in the assessment and treatment of children and adolescents with anxiety. Dr. Slattery is also actively engaged in clinical research of children and adults with anxiety disorders and how that impacts their health. She has some great advice for you, whether you be a parent or a grandparent or a teacher or anybody who spends time with children, frankly. You're gonna learn a lot from this. Dr. Slattery, thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here with you.
How do we define anxiety? How do you define it anyway? What do we mean by it?
Yeah, it's a great question to start out with because I think people have different interpretations and understanding of what anxiety means. And there are a lot of interchangeable words. So sometimes we use the word anxiety, sometimes we say worry or nervousness or fear. And all of them conceptually group under a feeling of apprehension or threat, like something's going to happen. And so we're always on edge a bit, if you will, and always kind of watching for the shoe to drop. And that causes that very uncomfortable feeling inside of monitoring and being vigilant to things.
How common is it in children?
Remarkably common, in adults as well. And in kids, the new studies coming out show that it's as common as one in out of four or five kids, which is remarkable.
Wow.
It's remarkable. The difference is, the interesting point is, why are we not seeing if it is so common? And I think the large piece contributing to that is that anxiety is very quiet and very silent, in contrast to, for example, a behavior problem or many times something like ADHD, where there may be disruption in the classroom, sort of the squeaky wheel that causes attention.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Whereas kids with anxiety are very quiet and very secretive about their problems and their symptoms. And remember, for kids, they're not aware that this is anxiety. This is normal life for them. So they're thinking, I don't quite fit in with everyone else, and they're staying quiet about things.
So given that, how do you determine which is it, or what it is, or maybe there could be more than one condition at work at a time?
Yeah, it's a great question, because if it's so highly prevalent and so yet underdiagnosed, how do we find it better? And that's really where parents and teachers and other people play very key roles of talking to your kids, but also watching them and observing their behaviors. Because, as I mentioned before, kids aren't always going to come to you and tell you they're worried about things, but you may see it in their behaviors. So you may see them avoiding things or becoming noticeably more anxious in situations or about certain topics. When they become more anxious, younger kids also may act out a little bit more because they're just not sure what to do with that inner angst, if you will, that they feel.
Dr. Marcia Slattery, our guest today, child and adolescent psychiatrist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're talking with her about identifying and treating anxiety in children. You may have some wonders about your own child or grandchild. Do you think they might be experiencing anxiety? What symptoms are you seeing? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Again, that's 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Is there a particular age where this is more likely to occur or manifest itself?
It actually can develop and show itself in very young kids, as young as 5 or 6 years old, and sometimes even younger. But the key age where we start to see kids come into the clinic is usually around 7 or 8. Mm. And that brings up the point, are there different types of anxiety at different ages? And indeed, that does hold for some kids. In other words, it parallels what the developmental experiences are for the children oftentimes. So kids that are 7 or 8 often present with anxiety that's focused on separation fears. They don't want to be leaving home or separating from mom or dad or go to school or go to birthday parties, which obviously are very important experiences.
So that's when, roughly.
Yeah, 7 to 8, yeah, exactly. But certainly thereafter, coming online a little more. So that's what I mentioned before with separation anxiety. There's also another type of anxiety called generalized anxiety, and that type of anxiety is, as the name implies, is pretty broad. It's not about one specific area or one specific thing that the child is worried about, but a more general worry about how they're doing in school or that things may happen around them, kind of a general fretting oftentimes, or many times worrying much about the future. So I have several children, for example, that may be 9 or 10 that are very distraught about worrying about getting good enough grades to get into college and being very distraught about that. And it's very real and very distressing for them. The other kind of anxiety that starts to come on in mid-childhood a bit more is what we call social anxiety, or what's often been called social phobia, where you can think of it almost as a severe kind of shyness, where it's very difficult for these kids to be around people they don't know or feel that they're not sure what to say, etc., and so they hold back. I think the important thing to think about with all of these different types of anxiety, there's a core feature often of avoidance. I'm going to avoid the things that I'm worried or anxious about, what make me feel anxious. So again, recall that I mentioned many times they're not aware of it in their thoughts, but in their gut they feel it, and they want to avoid the situations. So they may avoid birthday parties, they may want to avoid school, they may want to avoid participating in activities, etc., because it just makes them too anxious.
Dr. Marcia Slattery, our guest today. Callers online, and we'll certainly get to the phones right now. There's still an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you listening in today. Beth in Milwaukee, we give you a chance first here. Hi, Beth. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have kind of a general question on what's the best approach if you notice that your child is all of a sudden exhibiting a new anxiety. We have a 5-year-old who's going through, I mean, we clearly know she's been having some difficulties because she's leaving her daycare center where she's attended, you know, preschool program since, you know, she's been an infant. And she's home with the summer, or home over the summer, and my husband's a teacher. And, you know, we've been talking to her about it, and she's been, you know, sad about leaving her friends and that she'll be starting a new school in fall. But all of a sudden, within the last week or two, we have been noticing anxiety about cooking. She is really anxious if we are cooking and worried about a fire with the stove, and we've never had anything that's happened, you know, that would, you know, that we know of that would cause her to have this anxiety. So we don't know if it's just coming out because she's having these other issues, and we've been just trying to, you know, talk with her about it, but it kind of is an irrational fear, and we're not quite sure what the best way to handle it is.
Okay, Dr. Slattery?
I think it's a great example of what I see in a lot of these younger kids, in that what kids often do is focus on a specific worry or fear, like fire, for example, or that there may be a bad tornado or storm. In other words, it taps into a broader worry that something may happen regarding my safety and my security. And when there are changes in their routine, especially as you describe what you've experienced for your child, that increases that sense of apprehension I was speaking about earlier. And whenever we start to feel more apprehension and apprehensive about certain things, it sometimes gets focused on a specific thing, as I think what's happening for the stove for your child. What I usually recommend is, there, as you perfectly described, it's an irrational fear many times. Obviously, I expect you're taking great care and normal caution in the kitchen, but these kids can worry about the worst outcome. It often goes to the catastrophic fears. And one way to deal with that is to assure them, but yet you can't reassure a five-year-old to a great degree because they don't really have the cognitive awareness of you or the brain development to understand a lot of the rationale behind what you're saying. What you'll get a lot more bang for the buck, so to speak, is if you try to decrease that broader sense of apprehension, that broader sense of vulnerability. So with many of these kids, making sure they're in their routine at home, things are predictable, things are consistent, engaging them in, part of what the routine is at home is really the most important thing you can do.
I wonder, just this morning, I turned on the news on television, and the first thing I saw was the fire out in California and a couple of houses burning, almost completely burning down. Could something like that, probably not the case in this particular, with this particular child, but could that have an impact on a child?
Yeah, definitely. Children are very susceptible to what they're seeing in the media, and that's an important point to bring up, to monitor what your kids are seeing and the frequency of how they're seeing a lot of the catastrophic things that are in the news these days. So fires, tornadoes, as we've seen recently, school shootings, et cetera, can just raise a child's fear that the world is an unsafe place and I have to watch out for things that are out there.
Beth, does that help out?
No, it helps. And I mean, as far as, giving us some examples of just trying to, and we're kind of starting a new routine because she's home over the summer, so that's helpful just to, try to reinforce more of a routine. And yeah, I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Sherry in Madison, turning to you next. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I teach four-year-olds. And they do exhibit signs of anxiety, and parents come to me or concerned with their concerns that they see as well. And I'm wondering if there are resources that I could perhaps familiarize myself with and refer parents to.
Another good question.
Yeah. I think one of the places I would start would be on some websites that I'd recommend. One is the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. They have a great website that has information about all these different types of anxiety as well as treatment approaches. There's also the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Those are two great websites.
So the anxiety, what is it again? The Anxiety Association?
Anxiety and Depression Association of America, correct. And the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, AACAP, are great resources in that regard.
AACAP.
Right. There are also a number of books that, not to give a specific one, because I think there are several great ones out there that you can find at your local bookstore if you go and look at the educational section about talking about worries and anxiety, which is very helpful, and books for parents as well. And the reason why I don't have specific books oftentimes is because they really vary about the ages of the kids, and they're targeted at the developmental cognition that the kid has at that age. So I think it's a great opportunity to go to the bookstore and just browse there as well.
And Sherry, if you didn't, and anybody else for that matter, if you didn't get those websites, Judith's got it down, and she's posting it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and so you'll get a link right there.
All right. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Dr. Marcia Slattery, our guest today, child and adolescent psychiatrist at the University of Wisconsin. She directs the UW Anxiety Disorders Program. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about identifying and treating anxiety in children today, maybe your children or your grandchildren. Our guest, Dr. Marcia Slattery, child and adolescent psychiatrist at UW-Madison. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. Maybe you have questions about issues relating to youngsters that you know or are related to. Maybe you found some ways to deal with anxiety. What's worked for your family? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Samantha in Elkhorn up next. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. I have a 15-year-old, and he doesn't talk. He's 15, so he doesn't talk to me. But he wants the stovetop on lock at all times because we can lock the stove so no gas leaks.
Yep.
And he is paranoid about that. And I can't get him to talk to me, so I don't know how to help him.
Okay, so he wants the gas essentially shut off when the stove's not in use.
Correct.
Okay. Dr. Slattery, what do you think?
Well, I think it could be a number of different types of anxiety or, as you well point out, trying to understand why he's having this particular fear. Some kids, and everything I'm speaking about today is relevant to adults as well. It just sometimes shows up differently in kids, can have worry about potential harm, as I was describing to an earlier caller, where it gets focused on a specific source of fear and harm, and in this case, again, the stove, similar to what we had before. Many times, though, when you talk to these kids, when I see them in my office, it's broader than that, and they actually will have different fears and worries about potential harm. So it's difficult to know with your son if it's very focused on this and a more phobic, if you will, kind of an approach or focus, or if it's really representative of something broader that he's worried about harm. For some kids, too, if they're repetitively checking things, for example, that the lock is on or the lock is on the door or lights are off, etc., that can be reflective of what we call obsessive compulsive problems. So there are a variety of different things to be considered. And really, again, I recognize the fact that sometimes kids don't want to talk about things and oftentimes with their parents as well, which is oftentimes why it's a good idea to have someone from the outside talk with him, for example, your primary care physician. It's someone outside and objective. And many times kids will share things that they don't with family members.
So it might be worth it get him in to see your primary physician.
Yeah, I think it's always a good idea to have another person to tap into in terms of asking the questions. And many times, again, these kids will open up a bit more because they're not sure, you know, for all of us, we talk about certain things in our families and certain things more so with our doctors and teachers, et cetera. So I think it's a good idea when you're worried about something to get another set of ears to see what's potentially there.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
You as well. Thank you very much for calling. And again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. I really enjoyed reading, before we go to the phones again, various types of anxiety as you identified them. Jekyll and Hyde, perfectionist and controller, the fretter, the avoider. These are, maybe talk with Jekyll and Hyde, for example.
Yeah. This is often, it actually was a phrase that one of the parents used for me. It said, my kid is like Jekyll and Hyde, in that, as I mentioned before, many times these kids with anxiety will not talk about their worries or may not even be aware of it, but you'll see it in their behaviors. And these are classic type behaviors. So, for example, at school, many of the kids that I see with this sort of presentation are very high achievers and the teacher's favorite students, which, again, makes it difficult to identify they have a problem, right? Because
right.
We'd like all the kids in a way to be that way. They're a joy to have in class, and they do well, and they want to participate and help, and they're delightful. And many parents will tell me that the minute the kids get home and they walk into the house, it's a very different story. The kids are very irritable. They're very reactive. They snap at things very quickly. They are on edge. And a lot of times it impacts the family where the parents and the kids will say they're walking on eggshells. They're not sure what to say because anything they say seems to set the kid off. And the kid's more irritable and anxious overall. And that speaks to the fact that with anxiety, many of these kids, that secretive component of it, when they're at school or when they're in outside activities, they're not going to show it. They don't want to look vulnerable. And so they're going to put on even more of a good face, if you will, to do well and to look well. But that takes a lot of tension. That takes a lot of stress and a hit, if you will, on the kid if you do that every day. That tension builds up during the day. It's not that they're not experiencing it, but it's building up. And by the time they get home, it's like the sponge is saturated. And one more drop, and that's what you get. And so the parents often see the very different side, which is the tension that's coming out, because that's where we tend to let our hair down and the tension out when we're at home. It's a safe place to do that, in contrast to a public arena. So you see very different settings many times.
Patrick wondered what impact news coverage of war has over, you know, it's been over 10 years now reporting on war, children.
Yeah, I think it taps into what we were talking about before, how media can influence and that sense of danger and the broader scope. So as I mentioned before, there can be different kinds of anxiety, and particularly for kids that have this generalized anxiety, as I described about multiple worries, there's, you know, a great one, right? We're at war in the world, and yeah, these different countries, it doesn't seem to stop. And it's almost as though a lot of these kids will go to the news and go to the papers and look for evidence that their theory is correct, right? Yeah. That, see, I told you, it's not a safe place. And hence, again, why it's important to monitor, but definitely can influence. And that's, again, speaks to the need to balance it with very positive stories as well that are out there. We don't tend to, unfortunately, put those in the news a lot, and they don't hit the front page. So what they're seeing are all these catastrophes.
George in Glendale, thanks for calling.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. I'm a grandparent of a 16-year-old young woman who lives in the Phoenix area, and she is flying to meet some relatives in Madison, and then is going to come by bus from Madison to Milwaukee, where I would pick her up. Except her mother has created such a fear, I think, that, oh, you're going to be snatched off the bus, and you're going to be kidnapped, and so forth. Now, she's flying by herself from Phoenix nonstop to St. Louis to visit other relatives. And so I'm going to go from Milwaukee to Madison, pick her up from the bus, and bring her by bus back to Milwaukee. But how do I deal with the what I think is sort of a parent fear-created situation? You know, the Badger bus, as far as I know, has been safe. My kids did it for 4 years in Madison. So yeah, how do you deal with that?
And she is 16, did you say?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
Is she expressing any worries or fear about the upcoming trip?
I have not spoken to her. I have only spoken to her mother, and her mother is adamant, to say the least.
Uh-huh.
She cannot ride the bus by herself.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. It brings up a good point that people around us and certainly caretakers for kids can have a significant influence on anxiety in kids because we're models for them. They're watching what we're doing. They're watching how we approach situations. And certainly there's always the importance of taking caution in situations and making sure that things are in place and we're being very responsible about things, including travel, as you're describing. But I think what kids need to see, and again, I'll bring it back to that point, first of all, is that you're doing it in a very calm and objective manner. You're reviewing what the potential risks are and the importance of taking care and precaution, et cetera. But at the same time, tapping into that the resources that the kid has, that they're prepared, they're ready, it's going to go well. Kids will pick up on parents' anxiety. In this case, again, not knowing the people, obviously, personally, that you're talking about, I think just maybe talking, was it your daughter that you were talking about, was the mother?
Yes.
And talking with her about just saying, we've got a plan and let's put that behind the scene of what we're talking about with the kid, that the kid's not there to see all the anxiety, in other words, and really present and talk with the child about what the plans are and how we're going to ensure safety, et cetera. But many times parents' anxiety? I mean, anxiety is very common in adults as well, right? Now we're talking about how common it is in kids, and so it's very common. And we all have anxious worries, and particularly when they're about our children, et cetera. But, you know, just to bring it to their attention that how we respond and how we react can very much influence how a kid reacts, because they're looking to us to set the example.
Yeah. There you go, George. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Mary in Duluth has a 7-year-old nephew who says, oh, I'm scared of that, or I can't watch that movie. It's scary. She's wondering, is that anxiety, or might it be something else? Apparently, the nephew is very open about talking about, you know, being afraid.
Yeah, that's an age where a lot of these kinds of fears may pop up, as you're describing. Scary movies, again, it's another source, much that we were talking about the media, that sense of vulnerability and fear for kids, they're very vulnerable of that, activating that sense of something could happen and these scary things that could happen. In many cases, again, I'd like to make the point, anxiety and worries in kids are very normal. We've all had them. We all still have them as adults. And really where you start to look a little closer is when do these sort types of worries and anxiety and nervousness get in the way? When are they happening more often than not, or is it on occasion? If you're finding that it's happening a lot and it's really getting in the way, and I don't know if in this case it potentially is, or if this child is kind of wondering and worried about these different things, you can start by a lot of, as we were describing before, books about worries and understanding them and how to, quote, conquer them, in addition to talking with the kids if it's a broader issue, if they have worries. And as I mentioned before, if you really wonder and you're thinking this may be a bit more, to talk to your primary care about it and get another opinion.
All right. Thanks again very much for that question. The issues can be turn into a real problem if they're not treated, the anxiety issues. You were talking about brain development in children, and, mm-hmm. and this can really affect their development?
Yeah, it's an important piece to keep in mind. Anxiety can impact and affect anyone, as we were describing, as young as 3, 4, 5 years old, all the way through old age. It's a very common experience that people have, and as I described, on a continuum, where you have mild anxiety to more severe anxiety. Why it's important to detect in kids is that it's in the context of a very actively developing brain. There is tremendous amount of brain development going on from birth all the way well into our 20s. And what influences that, and in many cases more than genetics even, is the experiences we have in life. And so with anxiety, many times, as I mentioned before, there's a component of avoidance. I don't want to go to those areas that make me feel more anxious. So it's the kids suddenly start not going on things that's normal for them, right? Like birthday parties and overnight stays and participating in activities, et cetera. They avoid because they want to decrease the likelihood that something might happen. Well, that may be an effective means to an end for them, but on the other hand, it's also not getting them out into the experiences that are very important for them developmentally. We want them to interact socially. We recognize that's very important for brain development. It's also important in the context of learning new things and being willing to try and experiment with different things. That's how we all learn. All of those experiences positively impact the brain. If we're avoiding, what's happening is that the tracts in the brain that are developing are really focused on what we're using, if you will, kind of the use it or lose it.
Oh.
And so what we're using is life is scary and I need to avoid and this is not good. And why that's concerning is that those sorts of tracts, those connections in the brain, can set lifelong patterns, and hence why many times adults that are treated for anxiety will speak of the anxiety having begun in childhood and never have spoken about it. So it can have influence on the choices we make in life, as well as potentially in brain development, because we want to optimize healthy brain development. And that comes to the importance of you know, as we're seeing these kids clinically and talking about how identifying them, to also continue to support research in this area that's actively being done in neuroimaging to understand the brain, the development of the brain and how these connections are made, and basic science research as well, all of which combine to help us in the clinic setting and in the home and in the schools to understand what's going on, because the more we understand, the more targeted we can make our interventions in all of these different areas.
We have Lori in Somerset with a question for you, Dr. Slattery. Let's go to her. Thanks, Lori, for calling.
Yes, good day. Thank you. To your point, doctor, about the brain then, as an adult, you're affected by the anxiety as a child. I was brought up in a very fearful home. My father was mentally ill. They said it was paranoid schizophrenia, but I'm thinking perhaps it was bipolar, which just wasn't spoken of or wasn't diagnosed with that term at that time. I'm in my 50s, and I've always known something just isn't quite right. And a couple years ago, I thought, basically, I'm just afraid. I'm a person who is afraid. And even though I know rationally and logically there's no reason for me to be so, it did start when I was a child. And I think, and if there are any younger people listening, I think the most important thing is for kids to know that they are very, very loved, that they're very, very safe. And if the adults around you don't make you feel that way, then that's a mistake on the adult's part, and you need to know your own value and seek it out from people who can show you that truth.
Mm. You're raising some interesting points here, Dr. Slattery.
Yeah, you brought up several very important points and a couple to add to. I agree that the role of adults for kids is critical, obviously, and having positive, supportive environments are essential. And certainly, to go back to my point that anxiety can affect brain development, that's one of many things. So the experiences overall, we may have difficult things that happen to us, but it also balances with what we have for positives. But you make some very good points about identifying it early and the impact that it can have and the importance of the environment, including adults. Those are great points.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, Lori. Thanks very much for calling. So who do we deal with? Should we be having our children or grandchildren, whatever, dealing with the family doctor first? Or what's...
That's usually the best place to start if you have some concerns or you're wondering about if it's a bit more than just some normal childhood worries, because the family doctor is typically well known to the child. And it's a familiar setting. You go in for your well child checks, and the doctor listens to your heart and takes your weight and the variety of things that are done on routine visits. So it's familiar, and it's a good starting point. And all physicians are trained to identify anxiety and hopefully by, again, expanding the integration of mental health into the primary care clinics more, as we're doing increasingly so, that will help them identify things earlier on and have interventions there as well as when to know to refer, for example, to a specialty clinic.
Yeah, and that's another part of it. Counseling with a specialty clinic is a way of treating.
So at our program, at the Anxiety Disorders Program at UW, we treat kids and adults, and in both cases, at any age, the core treatment is psychotherapy, what we call cognitive behavior therapy. So many times, I think people wonder if the first step is medications, which is not. It's treating with this form of psychotherapy that really addresses the cognitive parts, the thinking parts, the worries that we have, and really understanding that piece of anxiety, as well as behaviorally, how do we experience it? For some people, for example, it's increased heart rate and problems breathing, or maybe muscle tension or stomach aches, very common in kids, etc. So teaching them about anxiety, a lot of education about that, as well as very targeted, specific strategies about what to do when they're feeling anxious. So it's basically retraining the brain, making new tracks, if you will, as we're describing, to teach the brain to think about it and to make it more rational instead of irrational, as we are describing what worries are about.
I would think that would be hard for kids to do.
Actually, not. It's been studied in very young kids. And again, comes back to this issue of brain development. A younger child isn't going to be able to understand a lot of it in the thinking part, if you will. But the behavioral part, we can teach them a lot of relaxation interventions. We can work with the parents a lot, which we do, to tell them what to do at home to help their child feel more relaxed. So you really gauge it at the age of the child and what the symptoms are, et cetera. But very, very effective treatment.
Now, we have a 10-year-old at home who I don't think has these kinds of issues. But if we did, we would probably pursue counseling. You mentioned medication, and that would be the area where I'd be least likely to want to.
Yeah, and that's a very common and respectable position to have. I agree with that. On the other hand, remember that anxiety and all these mental health problems that we're talking about, depression, et cetera, are biologic in nature. It's affecting the brain. And so when it is more severe, and that's when we start to consider the use of medications, it would be like telling someone with high blood pressure, get it down, get your pressure down,
yeah.
Right? We know we can do certain things. We can change our diet. We can stop smoking. We can do more exercise. But in some individuals, the blood pressure is still high, and that's where the role of medication comes in. We would be silly, right? We wouldn't say that. Or diabetes, get your sugars down.
Yeah.
And the medicines, what the medicines do, the medications for anxiety, is really to decrease that tension, that biologic piece, that then allows you to do the therapy and allows you to think and problem solve more effectively. So it's an adjunct to the psychotherapy and really facilitates the therapy and the strategies and the problem solving to work. Otherwise, what happens is you often kind of shut down and you get very anxious and stuck, if you will, in knowing what to do. And so, as I describe, it's like swimming upstream, trying to do the therapy when it's so profoundly present.
And you mentioned earlier a couple of websites, and let's go back to those too, so because we have them posted up on my Facebook page. But again, what were those valuable websites?
The American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry is one that I highly recommend, as well as the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Both of them have very great, very good components on child anxiety.
And we have those linked on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Marcia, thank you so much. Dr. Marcia Slattery, our guest today, child and adolescent psychiatrist at the University of Wisconsin, and directs the UW Anxiety Disorders Program. She's it's great to have her on. I hope you'll come back and be with us again sometime.
Great to be here. I'd love to.
Thank you so much. It was interesting for me to learn, I think, some great conversation with her about helping our kids with anxiety. Lots of great information for how to help our children live full and happy lives. And coming up next, we'll talk about something else to add to our children's lives, their family history. We're going to take a special look at African American genealogy today. And I know that's going to be fascinating. I hope you'll stay with us because that's coming up right now here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.